Good evening, everybody, and welcome to this evening's teleseminar called How to Escape from Your Cubicle. My name is Damien Sen, and it's a great pleasure to have you on the call this evening. In a few moments from now, I'll be joined by our very special guest, Pamela Slim. But before I introduce Pam, please allow me to share how this call will work this evening, particularly if this is your first PeopleYouShouldMeet.com call that you've tuned into. Now, we're going to be on the call for around about an hour, and over the course of the hour, I'll be asking Pam a whole series of different questions on our topic. Some of the questions will be my own, but the vast majority of questions will have actually been submitted in through the site prior to the call. Now, I first came to hear about Pam's work through a very good friend of mine, Kath Duncan, and Kath actually mentioned Pam's blog called Escape from Cubicle Nation, and as soon as she shared it with me, it immediately grabbed my attention, because for me personally, I spent 8 years slogging it away in the corporate world without really any great sense of joy or satisfaction. So I immediately jumped on the blog and was absolutely captivated by the content and the material on it, and was immediately drawn to actually contacting Pam to explore this topic further. Now, Pam is a seasoned coach and a writer who helps frustrated employees in corporate jobs break out and start their own businesses. A former corporate manager and an entrepreneur herself for more than a decade, she deeply understands the questions and concerns faced by first-time entrepreneurs. Now, Pam has also just released her book called Escape from Cubicle Nation, From Corporate Prisoner to a Thriving Entrepreneur, this spring. So it gives me great pleasure to welcome to the call our very special guest, Pamela Slim. How are you doing, Pam?
I am wonderful, and thanks for having me.
It's a great pleasure to have you on the call. Now, I thought I'd just actually start you off at the top, Pam. I know many people who are working in corporate environments are very happy staying in those corporate environments, but there's another group of people that do dream of actually breaking out and doing something of their own. And I was just wondering, for people at home who are sort of pondering whether they have what it takes to actually break free, if someone has a big enough dream, is it possible for them to move away and break free of their cubicle?
I absolutely think that it is. And one of the things I think I found when I was writing my blog and also my book is that a lot of what stops people from considering starting their own business is that it just feels like such a gigantic leap. And the metaphor that it would often come to mind that people would literally say is, I just feel like I'm jumping off of a cliff. Even as you said, those that are in a corporate environment that are not happy, that know they don't feel right, they have a certain sense sometimes inside and a longing, a desire to do more with their life. But it feels like it's just such a huge leap to leave everything that's familiar behind. And for people that have grown up as an employee in a corporation, there are things, of course, that are not so great about it. There are things that are wonderful, which include benefits and a steady paycheck and a sense of order, knowing kind of how things work in a structure that makes sense, that you can operate in. So part of what I like people to think about is you do not have to make a gigantic leap, you know, give notice and say, forget it, I'm starting my own business, and then your first effort has to be a raging success. I like rather a much more simple approach of starting just with the little tiny projects on the side. And for some people, the experience is more about first tapping in to say, if I really hate it here in my cubicle, then where do I want to be? What do I really want to do? What are the kinds of things that interest me? And some people don't really have any sense at all about what they would like to do. And so that becomes the first piece of work, to really get introspective, to tap into what is interesting to you, to thaw out your soul, is the metaphor I use in the book, and to really get more in touch with what actually makes you happy. And then you can begin to pursue maybe some specific ideas once you identify what you love and maybe a market to work with. Then you could start testing and trying that idea in a small way on the side. And by doing that, you can learn as you go, and it doesn't have to be such a gigantic leap. So I just offer that because I think that's sometimes where that question of who is really cut out to be an entrepreneur comes from, is that people do think about it as this thing that requires a huge amount of courage, right, where you just, you know, work up the muster and you have to be somebody who takes huge risks and is savvy in every part of business. And I haven't found that to be the case. Sometimes it's the quiet, methodical people who work step by step on a project and they get far enough along to where they finally see a business develop, that can be a very viable way of leaving the cube as well.
That's great. I like the analogy of huge courage because I was in an interview recently myself and someone asked me if it took huge courage to actually leave my corporate job. And I actually thought, for me personally, it was going to take huge courage to stay in the environment.
So, right.
just to slog it out for the next 20, 30, 40 years of my life. But often when people follow their hearts, just a personally enriching experience, it doesn't actually feel like there's effort or struggle or courage is required at all. Is that something that you found, Pam?
It is, and there's so many interesting components to that because definitely when you are doing things that you love and you're in a life that really feels good to you, and by that what I mean is you're living in a place that you really love and you're working in a way that makes sense to you. I was just reading a wonderful, wonderful article on the New York Times online that was from their magazine that I think was an excerpt from a book, and I'm going to forget what it is, but it's an author that just wrote about how he started a motorcycle repair shop, and he has an MBA and advanced degrees, and everybody was shocked that he would actually throw his life away, right, with doing something like repairing motorcycles, where the way he describes it in such a beautiful way is that the nature of the work that he does made so much sense. And he describes sitting with somebody who he learned a lot of the mechanics with and having it be such a beautiful process of observing all the knowledge that man had and how it was that he worked and how he diagnosed problems and how good he felt and how much joy he had. And through that process of working, learning motorcycle mechanics from that teacher, then he would go back into his corporate job. I think he was the leader of a nonprofit organization. And he said he found really the polar opposite, people who are not working on real things in many ways, having real open, honest conversations. So that's, I think, a really wonderful example of somebody who's found the kind of work situation while he is working, he's actually enjoying it. And he sees much level of depth in terms of, you know, the nature of how he approaches his work, even though he is what sometimes the social self can judge as being in kind of a, you know, a mundane or some kind of a lowly profession. And so I think that's an example often of each of us has that natural state where we're really our best. For some people, they might be sitting in front of a computer creating spreadsheets when really what they love to be is up in front of people. Or maybe they're in front of people all the time as a salesperson when really what they want to be doing is crunched in front of their computer creating beautiful code, you know. And so when you start to identify those kinds of ways that you really can flourish as a human being in that right place, that is where the ease comes in. That, I think, is really where you can feel good. Now, the counterpart to that is I don't want to paint the picture as uniformly that it is always easy. In fact, sometimes it is extremely challenging to learn the things that you need to learn or to go through a period where you're working really hard and you're doing the right things, but the money's not coming in. Right? Or you just get stumped and you try something and it really doesn't work and you think you're going to sell a bunch of product and you end up selling nothing. So that definitely is not always easy, but it's always good because you know why you're doing it and you have that. To me, I don't see difficulty and challenge in a negative way. I think it's really, really healthy if we're working on something important that we're going to be challenged by it because that's how we learn and grow as human beings. So it's kind of the good, clean, hard mastery challenge versus the I'm sitting in a place that's not the right place for me doing things that I don't care about kind of hard, which to me is a lot worse.
Absolutely. I agree with that 100%. Now, Pam, I was just wondering if you could actually share your own transition. Like you began in the corporate world and then ventured off to follow your own heart and line of work. And I was just wondering if you could actually share with people how you made the transition.
Yeah, I did. It was 1996, and I had just turned 30. For about 10 years, I had been working steadily, a number of different nonprofits and then corporations. My last real job was at Barclays Global Investors. So I actually really liked my work. And it was very interesting and challenging. I work with a great group of people. And at the same time, I had also been running a nonprofit organization on a volunteer basis. I did a capoeira, which is an Afro-Brazilian martial art, and I was the executive director So in the evenings and on the weekends, I did lots of teaching and grant writing and performing and all kinds of stuff like that. So what happened when I turned 30, I think, is my body said enough, enough of your 100-hour weeks, and I got pneumonia. And it was a time where all of a sudden, from just being constantly on and very, very physically active, I just completely shut down. Simultaneously, we had a merger, and so my immediate management team, who were wonderful, who were fantastic managers and great mentors, they all moved on to different organizations. So I just saw that, and I said, you know what, I think this is a chance to just reevaluate and do something different. And I did what I don't encourage people to do, which is just to leap without a net. I just quit, and I didn't know what was next, but it was a very ripe job market in the San Francisco Bay Area in 1996, and so I was just interviewing for different jobs, and nothing really sounded interesting, and then my former manager had gone on to work for Hewlett-Packard, and so I called her up and asked if she had any contract work, and I started to work as a contractor doing leadership development and training, instructional design, and that's really when a light bulb went off for me, because I realized that I had always loved the what of what I did. I loved learning, training, and development, coaching, but when I had the right structure, when I had freedom and flexibility, it just worked so well for me, and so that was really a revelation, and I started coaching for the next 10 years, consulting, working inside a whole bunch of different corporations all throughout the U.S. and Europe, and had a great time. So that was just about, you know, during the last year or so of that work is when I really started to notice that there was a lot more difficulty within corporations. It was, as much as I try to make things well from the inside out, there were so many people who were miserable, and that's really what spurred me to take the new direction and shift to Escape from Cubicle Nation. So I started my blog in October of 2005, and that was the beginning of a whole new track of work, which, of course, turned into a book.
Amazing. And for the people that you've been working with, have you seen some pretty remarkable transitions from people who are stuck doing a job that they hated into actually liberating themselves and stepping into something that they absolutely love?
I have. It's amazing. It is mind-boggling to watch what happens when people really do the work. And again, for me, the core of what I do is my purpose when I work with somebody as a coach. I don't have the end objective saying, you know, my objective is to get you out of the cube and starting your own business. My objective is really to work with them to help figure out if they have an assumption that they'd like to work for themselves, is that true, is that right? And if it is, then of course help them to do it. And if it's not, then help to find another situation that works. So people often do really interesting and creative things. You know, I have one client who had actually been working in India and, you know, for a long time, was really ready for a change, had some major personal transitions happening, and he decided to take, he'd been very, very savvy financially, had saved a lot of money, him and his wife, and they decided to take a year off and do this amazing learning sabbatical. And they're doing documentary filmmaking workshops in Nicaragua and language classes and cooking and all this amazing stuff. And his whole purpose is really to have this personal sabbatical to really figure out the what of what he wants to do. And I'm just amazed at the courage that him and his wife have to, I just work with him, but then, you know, of course he's in partnership with his wife, and she also got really fired up by the changes he was making. And so I know that is going to be a completely life-altering experience for them. It's definitely going to change the course of their lives. So things like that are amazing. I definitely have seen people do that, you know, classic change from just being an employee and feeling really unfulfilled into going through the whole process of finding out what they really want to do. And it's just so fun to watch what happens when they come alive and then go through the struggle of figuring out how to come up with a business model that works and then actually have it be successfully up and running. It's very, very exciting, very kind of precious time to work with people.
Absolutely. Now, I know many people, when they contemplate some kind of life change, they stumble in thinking about the first step. I was just wondering, for people who are thinking about making the first step, what's a good first step to take to actually start up their own business?
The first step for me is to do that internal work. So it's to check in with yourself and say, What is it that I really want to do? What are the kinds of things that I feel very passionate about? And it seems like it's a simple question, but those of you who are listening may realize it's actually not. If you have been in a corporate environment for a really long time, what you learn to do is to shut down your creative voice. You would never survive the hours of agonizing meetings and hundreds of PowerPoint slides if you did not in some way shut down your creative self. It's just what happens in order to survive. And so in order to get back in touch with what's interesting to you, I really like to look at yourself, really observe yourself, and notice where the situations in which you're really happy. You quote an exercise in the book from Jim Collins, who wrote Good to Great and now just has a new book coming out. I heard him talk about his own journey, and he described his process where he got a notebook that he named a bug called Jim, and he observed himself as if a scientist were observing a bug and just paid attention and made notes to when was he really happy, when was he upset, what were the kinds of activities that he loved doing. And at first, it just seems like kind of random abstract notes. You can pay attention to the kinds of movies that you like or music or general topics, or you notice what kinds of people that you gravitate towards or what kind of topics get you really excited. And you can come up with this huge mishmash of different ideas. After a while of observing, then you can begin to see some patterns. And that's where you can start to say, oh, okay, you know, I notice that a core theme is really working with people, you know, and I really love photography and I'm totally drawn to cross-cultural relationships, you know, and that might kind of lead you down a road of photography. Interestingly enough, I have like 3 or 4 clients right now who are all interested in photography. It seems to be some common theme from the universe that I project somehow. My dad's a photographer, so maybe that's what it is. But, you know, just examples of how you can begin to kind of look at general themes and then begin to look at the market and say, you know, how could I actually begin to make this work? The reason I say it's important to start first with who you are and what you're interested in is what a lot of people do is they just look out at the market and they say, okay, how can I make money as a self-employed person? And they say, well, I could just consult. And maybe they could do things that they're really tired of doing in their current job, but they know they could make money at. There's nothing wrong with that, but I think it's going to be easier if you first really identify the things that are very exciting to you. And then you can start to look at in the market and say, of these things I'm interested in, where is an actual viable business idea? And then you begin to walk that along the path, choose a specific idea, find ways of testing and prototyping and trying it, getting feedback, and then where something really might start to take off, that's where you go through the other much more thorough planning steps of creating a business plan, et cetera.
Great. Now, in the work that I do, I see lots of people begin their businesses and then really struggle with the marketing. I was just wondering if you had any key pointers for people starting out on how to market their ideas so other people can come on board and actually share the experience with them.
Yeah, I think it's actually related to what we're talking about when you are really deeply passionate about something and you have a sense about what it means when you're doing something. If you are a photographer, if you're a coach, if you write really elegant code, if you create websites, whatever you do, if you really understand the impact that it has on people and you really understand the result and the value, that means fundamentally you're going to come from a place of feeling good about what you're doing. You're not just doing it to make money. You see the meaning behind it. So that's kind of a core anchor for you to feel really good about what you're doing. And then from there, I'm a really big proponent these days, especially, of beginning to connect up with social networks and use that as a way to connect with your market and begin to talk with people and learn things and share your ideas. I think we're in such an exciting time where you don't have to take out a huge advertisement in the paper or, you know, learn some long marketing sales process that feels uncomfortable. There's more of a natural organic process of people that are connecting with each other on Twitter, on Facebook, on blogs, in different specific forums and sites where they can begin to get to know each other personally and then also get to know each other professionally. And that's where I've seen a lot of the really authentic, non-yucky kind of marketing take place is where you're choosing a method that really feels comfortable to you and as a core premise, somebody who has really influenced me more on therapists or consultants, things like that. Robert Middleton is a marketing coach's site is actionplan.com. I don't know if you're familiar with Robert.
Yeah, he's been
around for like, 24, 25 years. And one thing, I've known him for like 10 years, and one of the things that I remember he said probably the first time I ever heard him speak was, give away 80% of your stuff for free and then charge a premium for the remaining 20%. And that felt so good to me because I love to share. I love to educate. That's just a part of who I am. So that way I knew if I'm giving away 80% through blog posts and podcasts and e-zines and free speaking gigs and things like that, then that's a great way to build a relationship with people, and then they already will understand and know my work, and then I can really, in a very graceful way, transparent way, let them know what I do and if they're interested, they'll want to work with me. So that, I think that's a really helpful framework. And for anybody that's struggling with that issue, I think that within any given market, be it if you're in a service business or a product business or B2B, whatever it is, there are some really good ethical experts in the area of small business marketing where you really can study the process that they have. Robert Middleton's one, John Jantz from Duct Tape Marketing is another. Jill Conrath writes Selling to Big Companies if you're more looking to work with large companies. And what I find is helpful about that is that you have an actual process and a structure to work through. So you don't feel like you're just kind of flailing in there desperately asking people to pay you money, which none of us like, right?
That's right. And I can actually totally endorse Robert's work as well. I remember when I started my coaching business around 5 years ago, the Action Plan Marketing Guide was the first thing that I bought, and it was just a wealth of knowledge, and it really helped me kickstart my own business as well. So for those of you thinking about buying that book, it's a great one.
Yeah.
Now, the other thing that I'm really interested in, Pam, is the fact that we're living in a very dynamic world at the moment, and lots of people are experiencing great amounts of change, and like a lot of that change is actually happening in the way that we do work, and more people today are actually feeling the urge to move away from corporate employment to actually set up their own enterprises. And I was just wondering, why do you think that's the case?
I think that we are in a totally amazing point of history. And what I see, and I really felt this a lot when we had, I'm trying to think of what month it was, maybe it was in February where the Lehman Brothers meltdown happened, if anybody can remember the specific time. The way I interpreted that event where we were all as a world witnessing the meltdown of some of our core financial institutions and our corporate institutions, it was to me like the final dropping of the curtain where I felt it for many years. The last 10 years I've been saying, corporations are not stable. There's many things that fundamentally, systemically really do not work within corporate life, but we still had that collective, maybe a little bit of denial that things were just the same as they were in our parents' generation and our grandparents' generation, and that the most safe thing to do was to work for a corporation, right? I mean, it makes sense. It definitely is more defined. You interview, you get a job, and you get a paycheck. It totally makes sense. It's kind of a more clear path. But when we had that moment where it's almost like we were, as the world watching an event like, 9/11 or the tsunami in Thailand or something like that, all of a sudden, like, we had this collective experience of realizing that things were never going to be the same. And to me, it was that really tipping point where many people are now saying, okay, I actually really get it. Corporations are not totally stable. It does not mean that everybody wants to quit and start a business because not everybody wants to do that. And it's completely fine and a wonderful idea to work as an employee, but you just really look at it perspective of managing your career and really thinking about yourself as being self-employed in whatever employment configuration that you have. So if people are managing their careers that way, I think it just opens up a lot more possibilities of maybe doing something on their own. So it's like if this really is not a good, stable situation and those companies that I thought would be there forever are no longer there or no longer stable, then let me, really start to think about ways to work as an independent person. And I think what has totally accelerated that process are social networks and people connecting, a lot of people setting up thriving businesses with very low overhead, using really pervasive and very free or cheap tools in order to set up businesses. And so, there's not a huge cost. It's not like you have to rent an office anymore in order to have a viable business. So I think those things together have really made a significant change. You know, it's like we all kind of woke up and we realized, all right, the world is really not the same. And so for some people, they also really did get worried. It was a little bit of a fear-based reaction, but they really were afraid that they were going to lose their job, and that kind of shifted them out. The positive side is some people also just realized it was time. It's really time to start to explore it.
Yeah, that's a great answer. Now, I was just also curious about the whole book writing process for you, Pam. Was Escape from Cubicle Nation a book that came together very swiftly, or was it something that took a little bit longer than that?
It didn't come together swiftly, that's for sure. It was born out of my blog, and as I said, I started my blog in October of 2005, and I just began to write what I thought was useful information for people that were considering working for themselves, that were corporate, you know, people that were corporate employees. And so after, I think, of about 2 years of writing my blog, I was approached by an author who wanted to introduce me to his agent to talk about the possibility of writing a book. This was a couple of years ago. And so I did connect with the agent, and we did start to work on ideas for the book. It just didn't really gel at that time. I worked on something. I wasn't feeling totally great about it. I don't think the agent was. We shopped it around to a few places. And I think the publisher who actually picked up my contract was the one that said it was kind of a pedestrian outline, meaning just, you know, totally boring, has nothing new. Why would we even look at it? You know, don't waste your time. So that experience made me retract completely, and I said, forget it. It's just not the right time. I'm not feeling it, and I just kind of let go. And then what I did is I just continued to coach more and more and more people that were going through the transition, which, of course, was exceptionally helpful to just gather all kinds of data about what people really needed and what they went through. And then I kept writing. And so I'm trying to think of the exact time. My daughter was 3 months old, and now she's just about 20 months old. So whatever, 17 months ago, I got an email from an editor portfolio from Penguin Portfolio, and she said, you know, I love your blog, and would you consider coming and talking to us about writing a book? So that was, at that moment, that was really the right time. And you know, things always kind of have that perfect sense in that way, where I really felt like I had a lot more stories. I was much more clear in terms of what the process was, and also what was the information I really wanted to include in my book that was not covered in other books. And so it was about, from the time that we actually got the proposal in, and they turned it around really quickly, we made the deal, and then it was pretty much a six-month process of writing the book. Definitely not easy, but the good not easy.
Cool,
the good hard, the good difficult.
But some amazing themes in there as well. I just love the whole idea of just letting go, and then just arriving very, very organically and very naturally when the time was right, rather than actually forcing the issue when you sort of set off on the journey, just realizing that everything has a divine time and space. And it was great just to hear that it came very, very naturally to you in terms of how Penguin actually approached you.
Well, it did. And, you know, the other thing that's just a bit amazing when I think about it is, look at now when my book actually came out. If it had come out a year and a half ago, we were in a totally different economic situation. We were not at that place where we would have seen all of the change happening. And I think there couldn't be a more perfect time right now for my book to come out, because more people are really exploring the issue of self-employment. And so it is. It gives me the chills when I think about it, that there is, in some ways, by letting up creatively, I felt like I didn't have to force it. I really let the story come out when it needed to. And then somehow the universe cooperated, and the entire external environment and the market for the book really, really opened up based on when it came out. So it was a pretty amazing process.
Amazing synchronicities. Now, Pam, I mentioned in the intro that we've had questions come in from people from all around the world, and I just sort of might ask a few of those questions now.
Great.
Now, it's always great. The thing that I love about this world is that, like, we are in connection with everyone else just through the internet and through telecommunications. It's amazing. And this question actually comes in from Costa Rica, which I don't think I've actually read out a question from Costa Rica before, so that's very, very exciting. And it comes from Jamie, and Jamie asks, I've made a good career in finance working for a company. Now I want to escape my cubicle, but I'm afraid of being able to keep my family fixed expenses. I've always been careful and not a big risk taker.
So the question is how to maintain some of that stability, maybe, as you're developing your business idea. Mm. And I think there's a couple of pieces to this. And first of all, it's wonderful that you've been careful in the past and thoughtful about your finances. One of the first things that I encourage people to look at is just to get a really clear sense about what is their financial situation. Some people naturally do that all the time and they're very clear and on top of it. Other people, like me maybe, are a little bit more free-spirited and only pay attention during tax time when we're forced to have to, you know, look at those things. And so whatever your financial profile, it's great to get a very clear idea of how much do you actually need, what are your expenses, where there are instances where you can cut back and reduce your ongoing fixed expenses, that's always going to be better, right? Because you just have a little bit more of a cushion. So you can cut back as much as is comfortable. Some people make choices like actually moving locations, so they live in a much cheaper place, or you know, downsizing a house, so they go to a smaller place that gives them a lot of flexibility. It's not a requirement, certainly, but if you are concerned about mitigating risk, these can be some options to give yourself a little bit more time to work through your business ideas. So when you have a clear sense about how much money you actually need per month in order to support your family, a lot of the financial experts I talked to for the book were saying have a minimum of 6 months saved in which you can use as a cushion. Obviously, more is going to be better. That's going to make you feel more clear about what you're doing. And then another really important piece, I think, is to begin to test and try ideas on the side when you are still employed. And I know that that's not always easy, especially if you have a family and you have a really full career. It's often hard just to find the time to do it. If you can pare down on your activities and just as much as possible focus on testing some of your ideas first, that will reduce risk like nothing else. Because if, for example, you start to work with some real clients who pay you, or you create a product and you're actually selling it, or you develop an online presence that is really strong and effective. I have one of my clients who started a blog. She does fantastic work around diversity. Her company is called New Demographic. And a really interesting woman, does all kinds of really different approach to racism and diversity. And she started a blog called Blogalicious about 3 years ago and just began to contribute really fantastic information about racism and diversity to the world. She got all kinds of wonderful press, CNN, New York Times, and from the work that she was doing on a consistent basis, building up on the side of her day job, then by the time she was really ready to make a move, you know, when she wants to do that, then she will have a lot more security because people already know who she is and what she's about, and she has a body of work to stand by. So it's, I think, all, if you're concerned about risk, that's always going to be a safer way for you. Where you can is to try to just to test and prototype in small ways on the side. And then the last piece of it is, if you consider that you have a finite period of time in which you're willing to risk, so you might say, I'm going to take 6 months and try to give it a go, and if I'm not profitable by that time, then I'm going to go and look at a number of different options. And so before you would quit your job, you would think through what could be some of those options. Would it be taking another job as an employee? Would it be working as a contractor? You know, would it be selling a piece of property or whatever it would be? If you have a number of alternatives and you have a finite date which you can check in and see how you're doing financially, that's also going to mean that you're not assuming so much risk. You can never, of course, mitigate it all, right? There's always going to be a risk. But there's a risk at staying in a job as an employee as well. And so you need to look at that. What would happen if you were to get laid off? And that's often, you know, what really kicks people into high gear about starting their projects on the side. Mm. So good luck to you. Buena suerte.
Great. That's a great answer and a great question. Now, this question actually comes from Raffaella in Italy. And Raffaella asks, In Italy, traditionally, people have a different kind of attitude towards jobs. Their dream is getting a sure and easy job by the government offices, where you cannot be fired and have lots of privileges. Can these ideas be fruitful in such difficult times?
That's a really interesting question. You know what I find, Rafaela, is that some of the clients I work with, actually have a client from Portugal who is so delightful and finds that a very similar attitude where she lives. And I find that for some people, it's really all about what actually personally makes you happy. So if that is a cultural norm in that people just take a safe, comfortable job, they feel good doing it, it makes sense, and they don't feel awful and out of place, then that's fantastic. Don't change more than you have to, right? There's nothing magically good about being an entrepreneur, especially if you're in an environment that really doesn't support it. This is very different, though, than if you do live within that culture and you have a different feeling. You might be somebody like my client who has a really different orientation and is hungry to do things differently, who doesn't want to do things the way that they've always been done. And part of what she's finding is it's a matter of connecting with like-minded people from all over the world and connecting with people that have a similar feeling. In some cases, maybe starting a business that isn't required to do it locally. If there is going to be a lot of resistance in your local geography, then maybe you're going to want to have a business that is more internet-based. If you are, you know, selling a product or you're selling a service where you really could have your market be outside of your everyday environment. So I don't think there's anything magical at all about the setup of being an entrepreneur. It's really about how you feel. And if you feel like you're walking through your life and you're not fully alive, and you have creativity, and you think it would be really fun to create and do something, then maybe a step would be to find a community, maybe initially online, of like-minded people so you can see what it feels like to take a couple steps in that direction.
That's great advice. Now, this one comes from Lucille in South Africa. And Lucille asks, what advice do you have for those who have already taken the plunge and are not quite where they want to be?
That is so common, right? It's like you think the biggest hurdle is just making the decision, and then that maybe is that example of where you've started to do something and yet you're not quite where you want to be. And that is a matter of really focusing in on tweaking. And this is another example for me where I really look to a circle of support and knowledge and information and mentors and what I call in the book my High Council of Jedi Knights for anybody that likes Star Wars, where you can surround yourself with people who have figured it out. And my first point of attack whenever I'm faced with a really big challenge is to say, I know that somebody out. And so let me learn from them. Let me look at somebody who, you know, if I'm a coach, who really has a thriving coaching practice. And it's not just anybody to look at, would be people who actually have similar values, who I feel like I can relate to, and I like the way that they run their business, and it really sits well with me. It feels like a model that would be comfortable for me. I identify those people, definitely study them in their business. And then in some cases, what I've done a lot in my own business as I've shifted directions is to learn in little bits and bytes. So I've taken classes around different areas of marketing. I've taken, 6-month-long programs. So one actually that had me start creating my blog was a class all about creating more of a brand, really building up your personal brand and getting known online. And so sometimes having those really focused educational experiences where you can learn specific things and tweaks about your business is what you need to move you through. It doesn't have to be all paid at all. It can be also where you just surround yourself with really smart people, study what people have done, and look for mentors and people who can help you. And then sometimes in certain cases, having a coach that does have specific expertise in an area that you want to work on, that you want to improve, is really going to be helpful. I think the worst thing you can do is to get isolated. And that's where it can just get scary and overwhelming, where you feel like you just have to figure it all out yourself. It's just constantly going to be a learning process. Getting going is a huge hurdle. Figuring out what you want to do is a huge hurdle. Once you get that done, you have to find the right business model. Then you have to tweak that. You can then grow incredibly, and then all of a sudden, you're facing the challenge of having way too much on your plate and not having any quality of life. So the challenges never end. I think it's knowing how to surround yourself with really good support and resources is the key to making it feel better. So the best of luck to you.
That's a great answer. Okay, this one's from Daryl Louise in the UK. And I'm not sure if that's Daryl and Louise or just Daryl Louise. Maybe it's Daryl and Louise. But they ask, how to stay motivated when those close to you want you to return to the corporate environment?
Ooh, this is a actually whole chapter to this topic, because similar to I think it was Rafaela's comment about being in a culture that maybe doesn't value entrepreneurship, we all are members of family systems and structures, and of course we're all very, very influenced, and so it can be a lot of situations for people where their spouse is really free and doesn't feel comfortable, or parents or other people that are close. So different things that are important. One of them is to really take the time to understand what is at the root of concern, and you have no money coming in at all, and the bills are piling up, and they're really concerned about that, and really have a low tolerance. He said, I'm so frustrated because my wife just doesn't support me, and I don't get it. I really feel like this is the right direction. And so we dug into it, and ended up feeling corporate job when she was a child, and had this whole string of unsuccessful entrepreneurial ventures, and it just stressed her out to no end to think that that was repeating with her husband. And so her emotional heat was not necessarily coming from being supportive of her husband, it was coming from that fear that her life was going to end up like it did for her as a child. And so when you take the time to truly understand what the concern is of a loved one, then often, and just work with them to find out maybe a way to feel better themselves, then you can have a better resolution. A lot of times I think entrepreneurs forget that they have been working day and night on their plans, and they have all this knowledge about it, and they know about the market and what they're doing. Often they only share the very short version with their loved ones, and so they don't really have a sense about how it's going to work. So sometimes it's a matter of sharing good information and thinking, and then coming up with some joint agreements. It's similar to what with Jaime or Jamie in Costa Rica was saying, where if you have a clear cutoff where you say you agree as a couple to say we're going to try this for 4 months, and if it doesn't work, we're going to go to plan B, right? Either you go back to work or I do, then you can have a little bit of breathing room and you have a joint agreement. If you are married, you go into business together. And that is the thing it's really important to understand. My husband has a construction business in Phoenix, Arizona, and we have been hit so hard by his business. And it impacts both of us, right? Because it impacts cash flow of the business. And in order to buy equipment, both of our names have to be on it. So I really don't take it lightly and know that it's really a deep issue for many couples. So that said, if you have clear communication, if you understand the root of their fear, that's when then you can make a choice. If it's just maybe, say, parents or siblings or neighbors who are pushing you, that's where you can make a choice about what you actually want to do in your life. And if you really feel deep in your gut that it's the right direction for you, that's where sometimes there can be some challenges with changing or letting go of relationships. A lot of times people want you to stay the same because it's more comfortable for them. If you change, it means that the nature of your relationship has to change too. And not all relationships are going to survive. Sometimes marriages don't survive. And that can be a very scary thought. But in the bigger picture of life, I would say if you know that you're moving in a healthy direction, if you feel like you're going to leave more of a positive imprint on the earth by the time you leave, by moving in that direction, that's where sometimes you have to make some tough choices.
Great. Some really fertile ideas in there. And I just wanted to actually add one more thought into that, Pam. One of the things that I see in the work that I do is acknowledging and recognizing different parts within an individual. So it could be there's there's part of me that's go-get'em and bold and wants to get out there and start up my business, and there may be another part that is a little bit more timid and is scared or nervous or afraid. Do you actually work with clients where they have buy-in from all the different aspects of themselves to move to the starting line of setting up a business?
Absolutely. And I think all of us have, we all have strengths in the way in which we're wired, in areas where we feel supremely confident, and there are areas where we don't feel as strong. And it's also true, I think, a lot of emotion, especially emotions around fear, come up naturally as we go through change. So there can be specific points where you are naturally going to feel a lot of fear. And a thought that I have about that is fear is really a wonderful teacher. It's not something that you have to push back or overcome. Or what I think is a very common misconception is that you just work up enough courage to where you don't feel afraid, and then you make your move. I hate to break it to you, but you never feel that way. You feel after you've done it. Courage to me is something that happens when you're looking behind you and you see the people with the machetes that are chasing after you. You know, you've kind of gotten far enough away to where they're gone. That's often where you feel that pride and that surge of courage. As you're walking through a big change, it is perfectly normal and natural to feel between people that successfully and those who don't is some people say, I'm just going to feel it and I'm going to act anyway. And, you know, so fear can really be a healthy emotion. You have a heightened sense of awareness because you feel more threatened and in danger because you're doing something that's different, that's not as secure. And the other thing is where you might have, like people, as you described earlier, who might not have come from a strong marketing or sales background, they might have a deathly fear about never selling anything, and that can be a great thing to examine. Maybe they do need to spend more time studying different models. Maybe they do need to observe successful, similar businesses as theirs and see what works. So fears can be really wonderful teachers, and I don't think it's about, you know, getting to a place where you don't feel any fear. I feel fear every day in different ways. And yet I really appreciate it, and it doesn't become a paralyzing thing. It's more something that I observe, and it means I'm stretching and growing.
Well, one of the things that's really helped me on my journey, actually, was a saying that fear is a close cousin of excitement, and whenever I'm not sure, I always err on the side of the fact I'm totally excited about what's unfolding in my life or my business or the opportunities that present themselves. And just that slight reframe actually makes me feel more alive and more willing to step forward to any opportunities that come my way as well.
That's wonderful. It's a great way of thinking about it. So much of it is, I've learned this as a coach, and my training as a coach, is so much of it is just reframing your thinking. What are the thoughts that you have about what it is that you're doing? And if you really are holding that thought of, you know, I'm excited and I'm interested in what I'm doing and I really want to help people, and it sure is challenging, but man, am I learning a lot as I'm doing it, as opposed to holding the thought that I have to get this perfectly right, and if I'm not successful, it means I'm a total failure, and I'm never going to live it down if I try this entrepreneurship thing and it doesn't work. If you hold that thought, you're probably going to walk around like a bundle of nerves and it's not going to allow you to really take steps that just encourage you to really learn and grow. So the thought part of the work is a very important piece. When you are feeling in a moment of intense fear, stop for a moment and reflect on, what am I actually thinking right now? What's the thought in my head? And often it's a thought that's probably not the most productive.
Cool, that's great. Now we've got one final question for you, Pam. And it's come from Andy in the United Kingdom. And Andy asks, why can't you have both passive income while enjoying the security of 9-to-5?
Great question and a great idea. There are so many different models and ways in which you can construct your life and construct your streams of revenue. And that's one that I'm seeing every day with a lot of people, is that as a way to maybe bring in some extra income or experiment with side ideas or have diverse streams coming in, of income, is to do things like setting up passive income. Now, I chuckle a little bit at the term passive because it's a rare thing that I have ever seen that doesn't require any effort at all. A friend of mine, Jonathan Fields, who wrote the book Career Renegade, he wrote a blog post once about how, you know, blogging is not passive income, and I actually included it in the book because sometimes traditional things you could think of as passive could be a product that you make for sale and download on your website, for example, an ebook, or maybe you have a software product, or it could be things like owning real estate and getting, you know, money back from that. In order to really keep it sustained and handle, you know, customer service, and if you're writing about something tech or something to do with marketing or whatever is the content of your information products, often that does change and it needs to be updated, or you have to be looking for new markets. So that's the part sometimes where to have a truly passive thing, that would be great. If you can find it and you truly do not have to do anything at all in order to make the money come in each month, then that's great. And just reinforce and keep doing more of that. But I think it's a great idea. I mean, I would love if everybody got in the spirit of experimentation and just tested and tried little things. And even when you bring in $5, if you, you know, set up a little Google AdWords campaign and you get $5 a month coming in, it's just pretty cool because it's $5 that you wouldn't have had. And then you can learn and think, well, how could I do a little bit more of that? You know, how can I test and tweak? And what happens is it makes you feel less afraid, less clingy towards the situation you currently have, and then you can make a really positive choice. You might choose to stay in your job because it really fits what you want, but you're doing it because you choose to, not because it's your only option and you're desperately holding on to it. That's not going to make you a good employee. And it probably will, you know, in many cases, get you escorted out the door faster than somebody who doesn't care so much about desperately clinging on. Mm. The analogy I use a lot is like dating, right? If you remember, I'm very happily married these days, so thank God I don't have to date anymore. But if you think about, you know, where you desperately want to go out with someone and you just need them and you don't feel really good about yourself and you're just trying to hold on to them, usually what they do is they run as fast as they can the other direction. They lose your phone number. They change their email address, right? Whereas if you're really confident in who you are and you think, great, you know, if you want to go out with me, fine. If not, there's many more people. That makes you naturally more attractive. It's one of those funny laws of, you know, laws of life. So the more clear you are as to the nature of work that you really are good at, and you position yourself in places where you're able to do your best work, whether it be as an employee or as an entrepreneur, you're going to be more secure and you're going to reduce your risk.
Absolutely. Cool. Well, Pam, we're coming to the end of our hour, and I just wanted to take this opportunity to say how thoroughly engaging I've found the last 50 minutes of conversation. I've been furiously taking notes and have made a lot of personal distinctions for myself, but also I think just the way you actually express your ideas, that you really can tell that this is something that you've thoroughly thought about, you're fully engaged with, and just the way that you express it just makes it really easy for people to conceptualize and understand. And just wanted to say that I think you're doing remarkable work, and I have no doubt that there are people on the line this evening that have really resonated with your message and that they actually want to find out more about the work that you do and potentially seek out your coaching services or maybe go to one of your workshops or buy your book. And I was just wondering if you could actually share how people can find out more about you and also how they can actually find out about working with you.
Absolutely. Well, I think it's so neat to have such an international group as well. That is my heart and soul, and my people are all over the world. My husband is Navajo, and I have friends from everywhere. So I really appreciate people dialing in from everywhere. Thank you so much. But the best place to find what I do is at my blog and website, which is escapefromcubiclenation.com. So there you can find out about buying the book, and there is a free download of the first chapter if you want to get a sneak peek. There's the first chapter of the book. I know that based on where you are in the world, I think in the UK, Amazon is due to be delivering the book in July. That's what some of my UK folks have said. So if you're outside of the US, the book might not be available yet. I know it is available in Australia, and I'm not sure about South Africa, but that should be coming soon because we have global distribution. And then also on that same site, you can find out there's a coaching tab that's more about my individual coaching if that's of interest. And another thing which I've just been really excited by is I started a program. It's called Quick Start to Self-Employment, and it's a virtual program. So a lot of people come in that are working on side jobs and kind of business ideas, and we just have this really lovely community that's starting to bubble and work together. where they are actually working on specific business ideas. So you can find that under programs, and that could be an option for people. It's a lot cheaper than one-on-one coaching. And what's been so cool to me is as people are giving feedback on different ideas, they're also in some ways becoming the first clients for each other. So it's just the coolest thing to observe. I've really enjoyed that. So everything is at escapefromcubiclenation.com, and I also really appreciate the opportunity to connect with you. I'm so grateful to our mutual friend, Kath, and
amazing.
I appreciate your time.
It's absolutely amazing. It's just so wonderful. I just wanted to echo those statements to actually reach out and connect with people all over the world. And the fact that we can just be having this conversation and be sharing it at the same time, it's just really very, very special. And I just think we're in an incredible time and space to really make the most of these connections and actually pull together people with similar mindsets from all around the world to make the world a better place. Great. Now, I was just wondering, Pam, if you had any final words for people who are sitting there at home thinking about whether they should start exploring this path of spreading their wings and taking off and flying with one of their ideas. Okay, sounds like we've just lost Pam. She's not on her mobile phone from her hotel room, so not to worry. I'm sure you got a really good sense of where Pam was coming from this evening. It's a shame she couldn't actually finish off the last question, but I guess it's left for me to actually say thank you to everyone. It's a real pleasure to have you on these calls every single week, and your questions that you send in and also the feedback that you send in after the calls are always very amazing to read and very inspiring for us and also for people who get to listen into the program as well. Now, this recording will actually be made available through the peopleyoushouldmeet.com website first thing tomorrow morning. So if call has actually resonated with you, certainly feel free to come back tomorrow and listen to it as many times as you like. Also, if you have a friend who you feel may be inspired by listening to this recording, do take that step forward and actively share the material. It's up there to serve everyone on their journey of transformation, so please do be generous with the material with other people. And that's it. So again, once again, thank you very much, everyone at home, and I look forward to having you on a peopleyoushouldmeet.com call very soon. Take care now.